Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on security features in Windows Vista. My name is Valerie Lee. Let's look at some of the topics we will cover today. When Microsoft Windows Vista arrives later this year, there will be over 1 million PCs in use worldwide. Not only are there more PCs, but people are doing more with them. Businesses depend on PCs for their core business processes, they store more information digitally, and employees rely on their PCs to communicate with each other. Among home internet users in the United States, broadband connections and online banking are more common than ever, and the PC has become the entertainment hub for photos, music, gaming, and video. Unfortunately, with more valuable information being stored and transferred online, computers have become an even greater target for attackers, identity thieves, and other criminals. Originally, most virus writers were motivated by curiosity and personal fame. Today, they are motivated by money. A stolen credit card number can be worth as much as $100 on the black market. As a result, phishing websites grew by nearly 500% in 1 year, and more than 25% of help desk time today is spent dealing with spyware. With so much motivation to compromise computer systems, users require computers with new levels of protection. During the development of Windows Vista, we took a holistic approach to security that produces a fundamentally more secure operating system than earlier versions of Windows, while still integrating easily into your current computing infrastructure. Building on the significant security advances in Windows XP Service Pack 2, Windows Vista includes fundamental architectural changes that help to make you more secure from evolving threats, including worms, viruses, and malware. Windows Vista was designed and developed using Microsoft's Security Development Lifecycle, or SDL, a rigorous process that significantly reduces the number and severity of security-related design and coding defects. These improvements minimize the operating system's attack surface area, which is key to improving system and application integrity, helping you to more securely manage and isolate your networks. You need to protect your company's resources. To assist you in this, we've developed Windows Vista to provide secure access to system resources. User account control allows you to better manage users' desktops and allows them access to only business-necessary resources. With improved auditing support, you can better monitor what information your users are accessing. Companies are increasingly concerned about the company and customer data that is on lost or stolen portable computers. There are many stories in the news about laptops with sensitive and confidential data stolen from corporations or government agencies. A new feature in Windows Vista, BitLocker Drive Encryption, can protect these systems by encrypting the entire system volume, including all the data. Additionally, with Windows Vista, you can control installation of common devices, such as USB flash drives, to protect your data from leaving your network. Malware, such as viruses, worms, spyware, and other potentially unwanted software, can cause a wide range of problems, including theft of personal information, slower PC performance, and the appearance of unwanted advertising. The effects of malware can range from mere annoyances to significant problems that can take a considerable amount of time and money to fix. We believe the best approach to stopping malware is to layer security features. Windows Vista contains several layered security features that can help prevent malware from installing, and that help find and remove malware if it has already been installed. These include automatic updates and Windows Security Center, the new Windows Vista Firewall, and Internet Explorer Protected Mode. As we go through today's session, you'll hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to this session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. First, you should be familiar with the Windows User Interface, especially in either Windows XP or Windows Server 2003. While Windows Vista offers a fresh new look, many features and functions behave similarly to previous versions of Windows. It will also be helpful if you are familiar with some basic Windows security concepts, such as configuring user access, network and firewall properties, and authentication methods. To cover all of our topics and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. Windows Vista offers many advances in security and compliance. We'll begin by looking at some of the Windows Vista security fundamentals. This will take us through the security development lifecycle, including threat modeling and code reviews. Then we will look at Windows service hardening. Next, we will show how Windows Vista improves upon threat and vulnerability mitigation. These include Internet Explorer Protected Mode, Windows Defender, and Network Access Protection. Companies are faced with the constant trade-off between security and productivity. We will show how Windows Vista introduces user access control in an effort to do away with this trade-off. Then we'll look at other steps taken to enhance identity and access control, such as plug-and-play smart cards and granular auditing. Finally, we are going to look at how to protect a company's most important asset, its information. BitLocker Drive Encryption, used either alone or with the Trusted Platform module, secures the computer's entire drive. The use of EFS smart cards and RMS clients also reduces the threat of information leakage. One of administrators' most requested features in an operating system is a secure by default behavior. Therefore, with Windows Vista, there are several processes in place to ensure that Windows Vista is secure by design. An improved security development lifecycle, or SDL process, was implemented for Windows Vista. Before any of the features of the operating system are implemented, we wanted to make sure that the code itself is secure. This is done by looking at the product end-to-end with security in mind. The process starts with periodic mandatory security training for all of our developers and program managers. Through this training, the teams gain a deeper understanding of what security threats exist and how to write secure code to protect against these threats. We also have security advisors for all the various parts of the operating system. This means that even developers working on a piece of the operating system that has no relation to security will still have a security advisor to help them understand the threat model of the operating system component. This threat modeling has been done throughout the design phase to ensure the code is created with security in mind, rather than being identified as a security risk after it has been implemented. Throughout the build process, the product has been reviewed by security experts and tested both internally and externally. All of this helps contribute to a highly secure product. Finally, Windows Vista has been designed with Common Criteria certification in mind. This is a set of evaluation criteria set by the United States government for judging the security of computer systems. By meeting these criteria, we are making sure that the product meets the requirements for use in the most secure installations. With Windows XP, services don't run at a high level of security. Fewer security layers with Windows XP mean a larger attack surface for exploiting vulnerabilities. Also, some drivers can run in both kernel mode and user mode, meaning that it's easier for malware to manipulate a service or driver that runs in kernel mode. And, since many of these services run at a high privilege level, if a service is compromised, the threat of it having access to the entire system is quite real. Windows Service Hardening with Windows Vista increases the level of security against these malware threats to services. With Service Hardening, if a vulnerability is found in a service and compromised by exploit code, that exploit code isn't allowed to propagate to other computers on the network. With Windows Vista, the number of security layers between the user and system kernel has been increased. In addition, the size of the high-risk layers has been reduced. This means that the amount of code that has been run at the kernel level has been significantly reduced. For example, with previous versions of Windows, there were printer drivers that had some kernel mode code and some user mode code. With Windows Vista, the printer's drivers have been moved into user mode exclusively, so that there's no kernel code in the drivers themselves. This has been done for a variety of services, and by making sure that services run with the least amount of privileges required, the system becomes more secure. The services that do require higher privileges have been segmented so that there's some lower privilege code running and some higher privilege code running. Again, the key is reducing the amount of code that is high privilege. Also, by using outbound filtering on the firewall with some other components, applications or operating systems can be profiled when they start, such as regarding which network ports they use, where in the file system they can write, and where in the registry they can write. Finally, there's a new layer introduced called User Mode Drivers. Even if there are vulnerabilities in the Windows service and it's compromised by exploit code, that exploited code is unable to make the service do something that it wasn't ordinarily be allowed to do. This helps reduce the risk of malware quickly spreading to other computers. What does this mean? Let's consider the blaster worm that appeared a few years ago. It did several things. First, it exploited a vulnerability in the RPC service and forced RPC to write a file to the file system. It also wrote a key to the Run Key Registry that made the malware persist once the system restarted. However, RPC shouldn't be writing to the Run Key in the registry, nor should it be able to write to the file system. With service hardening and Windows Vista, when RPC starts, it will have a profile of which network ports it can talk on and where it can write in the file system and registry. This is then enforced by the operating system, so that if something like Blaster comes along again in the future, it won't be able to use RPC or other Windows services to do things that it shouldn't normally be able to do. In this way, we can prevent malware from propagating rapidly across your network. Service hardening will be available to third parties to opt into so that they can take advantage of these security enhancements. Now that we have introduced some of the fundamentals of Windows Vista security, let's delve into threat and vulnerability mitigation with Windows Vista. Internet Explorer 7 provides significant improvements over Internet Explorer 6. Namely, it greatly reduces the attack surface by which many kinds of malware can enter a computer. Malware can install in two ways, by tricking users or by exploiting vulnerabilities in the operating system or applications. Previous versions of Internet Explorer were the vehicle for multiple social engineering tricks and exploits. Among the improvements to Internet Explorer 7 is the new phishing filter. The phishing filter helps users identify malicious websites that might seek to extract personal information or install malware. The phishing filter uses heuristics, such as images hosted on another server or the use of IP addresses instead of domain names, to identify suspicious websites. It also checks sites against a list of known phishing sites. In addition, Internet Explorer 7 uses the address bar as a visual cue to convey information about the intent of a website. Green for known good sites, yellow for suspicious sites, and red for known phishing sites. Since Internet Explorer 7 adds support for international domain names and URLs, it also detects a variety of spoofing options for malicious actors. While www.microsoft.com might have been spoofed with a 1 instead of an I, replacing an O with an umlaut creates more options for attackers. Because of this, Internet Explorer 7 notifies you when visually similar characters in the URL are not expressed in the same language, thus protecting you against sites that could otherwise appear as known, trustworthy sites. In addition to social engineering protections, Internet Explorer 7 provides greater protection from exploits. First, unified URL parsing means that the URL parsing capabilities in Internet Explorer 7 have been rewritten and unified as one. Another significant improvement with Internet Explorer 7 is the ability for ActiveX opt-in. Since Internet Explorer 6, we have been progressively tightening down freedoms we gave to ActiveX. Now, we require users to opt-in to use any pre-installed ActiveX control, as well as new controls. Finally, protected mode in Internet Explorer 7 limits Internet Explorer to just enough privileges to browse the web, but not enough to modify user files or settings by default. As a result, even if a malicious site attacks a vulnerability in Internet Explorer, the site's code will not have sufficient privileges to install software, copy files to the startup folder, modify registry settings, or hijack the settings for the browser's homepage or search provider. Malware has become a top concern in today's computing environment. Users running Internet Explorer 6 with administrator rights exposed several ways for malware to exploit the system. With Windows Vista, there are several measures taken for advanced malware protection. These include protected mode in Internet Explorer 7, ActiveX opt-in, and the new phishing filter, in addition to the Windows Vista firewall. Internet Explorer 7 and Windows Vista offers two major security improvements. The first one is ActiveX opt-in. ActiveX opt-in is one of the steps taken to ensure secure by default behavior. To reduce the attack surface, ActiveX opt-in will automatically disable ActiveX controls that are rarely used or that were never intended to be invoked in Internet Explorer. ActiveX opt-in is designed to give users more control over the software running on their PCs. Controls that users have installed through a web download or that have been used in Internet Explorer before upgrading to Internet Explorer 7 will be enabled by default. Users will also have the option to enable controls as needed using the same information bar they have used to install new controls since Windows XP Service Pack 2. Once the user has chosen to enable the ActiveX control, Internet Explorer 7 will confirm the install and then enable the control. While the final implementation is still being developed, the goal is a safer browsing experience for users with the add-ons they value already enabled. The second major security improvement with Windows Vista is Internet Explorer Protected Mode. Protected Mode offers users a powerful security enhancement by reducing the severity of threats faced by malicious attacks. Internet Explorer Protected Mode builds upon user account control to safeguard user data and settings, even when you're logged on as a standard user. When browsing the web, even if you're not an administrator, you have the ability to change your homepage, to delete files in your My Documents folder, and to perform other similar operations. With Internet Explorer Protected Mode, we are making sure that an application or piece of malware can't do the same things without your consent. One way that we've done this is by allowing Internet Explorer to write only to temporary Internet Files folder and to no other location. So when you're browsing the web, a piece of malware can only write to the temporary Internet Files folder. It can place a file in your startup folder or change your homepage or perform any similar operation without your explicit consent. This is done by running a broker process that has parts of Internet Explorer running with both low and high privileges. The broker process maintains communication between these two operations. So if you don't want to save a web page or install a control with your consent, the broker process allows that to happen. Internet Explorer 7 with Windows Vista provides dynamic protection against fraudulent websites. This protection is provided by the phishing filter included with Internet Explorer 7. The phishing filter uses three methods to help protect users from phishing scams. First, it compares the addresses of websites visited against a large list of sites known to Microsoft as legitimate. This list of sites is stored on your computer. Second, as websites are visited, the phishing filter uses special heuristics and scans the page for special characteristics common to a phishing website. This heuristics engine is also stored on your computer. Since attackers and attacks change frequently, these heuristics, as well as the list of legitimate sites, are continuously updated through a centralized, dynamically updated Microsoft service. The user has a choice to opt into the service. It has two modes, automatic or as needed, both of which will have Internet Explorer ask you if you want to send the website address to Microsoft to be checked. The dynamic service check allows the latest heuristics to be used and also provides instant access to an updated list of legitimate websites. Finally, through the service, the site is checked against a live list of known phishing sites. This live list is highly dynamic and becomes out of date within hours, making it more efficient for you to access through the internet. This list is not stored on your computer in order to save space and processing time. The phishing filter will work in the background until the user visits a website on the list of reported phishing sites. When this happens, Internet Explorer will display a warning web page and a red notification shield on the address bar at the top of the browser. From the warning web page, you can continue or close the page. If the website contains characteristics common to a phishing site as determined by the special heuristics, Internet Explorer will notify you in the address bar through a yellow notification shield that it is a suspicious phishing website and that you should take appropriate action. You can click the notification for more information. Microsoft will be using many data sources to make sure that the phishing filter is accurate. However, mistakes do happen. You, as a consumer, can also provide feedback to Microsoft when using the phishing filter. You can submit through our online feedback system websites you feel Microsoft may have missed or may have mistakenly classified as a phishing website. Even with all the improvements to Internet Explorer 7, enabling Windows Vista Firewall is an important step in securing your system. If your computer is not protected when you connect to the Internet, attackers can gain access to personal information on your computer. These attackers can install code on your computer that destroys files or causes malfunctions. They can also use your computer to cause problems on other home and business computers connected to the Internet. A firewall helps to screen out many kinds of malicious Internet traffic before it reaches your system. One of the new features with the Windows Firewall with Windows Vista is its integration with IP security. IP security, commonly called IPsec, is a suite of IP protocols used to provide secure communication. IPsec policies and filters distributed by group policy provide authorization for authenticated users and computers. IPsec provides the ability to protect communication between warp groups, local area network computers, domain clients and servers, branch offices, extranets, and roving clients. Although support for IPsec is built into Windows 2000 and later, in Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, Windows Firewall and IPsec are configured separately. While the purpose of Windows Firewall was to block or allow incoming traffic, IPsec could also be configured to block or allow incoming traffic. Because blocking and allowing traffic behavior for incoming traffic could be configured through two different separate services, it was possible to have duplicate or contradictory settings. In addition, Windows Firewall and IPsec supported different configuration options for specifying allowed incoming traffic. For example, Windows Firewall allowed exceptions by specifying the application name, but IPsec did not. IPsec allowed exceptions based on an IP protocol number, and Windows Firewall did not. In Windows Vista, the Windows Firewall and IPsec have been combined into a single configurable tool with the new Windows Firewall with Advanced Security Snap-in, which now controls blocking and allowing of inbound and outbound traffic, in addition to protecting traffic with IPsec. Commands within the NETSH ADV firewall context can be used for command line configuration of both firewall and IPsec behavior. The integration of Windows Firewall with IPsec provides computers running Windows Vista with an authenticating firewall. Another improvement with the new Windows Firewall are the more intelligent firewall rules. Now administrators can specify security requirements such as authentication and encryption. Also, Active Directory computer and user groups can be specified. Enterprise management can benefit from the addition of outbound filtering in the Windows Firewall. Previously, only inbound communications were filtered. Outbound filtering can improve business productivity. For example, an administrator can block sharing through peer-to-peer application that you don't want communicating in your network. In addition, if an application has a known vulnerability and there's no patch available, you can set up a rule that allows the application to be used, but not communicate outbound in the network. Now let's look at how to use these tools to configure the Windows Vista Firewall. In this demonstration, we will add the Windows Firewall with Advanced Security Snap-in to the MMC and then use it to review the new interface and configure firewall settings. Windows Vista includes many new settings that can be used to control the security configuration of a client computer. The Windows Vista firewall can be managed using a new snap-in for the Microsoft Management Console, or MMC. We'll start by opening the MMC and adding a few snap-ins. First, we'll select the Windows Vista firewall with Advanced Security snap-in. In later demonstrations, we will explore group policy objects and access the domain group policy, so let's go ahead and add those as well. We will need the device manager later as well, so let's add the snap-in at this time. Now let's save this console to the desktop and call it the Security Console. The Computer Connection Security node stores the set of rules for protected traffic for the computer. We'll begin by creating an authentication rule. There are 5 types of authentication rules. Select Isolation to specify that computers be isolated from other computers based on membership in a common Active Directory infrastructure, or because they have an updated and current health status. Authentication exceptions allow you to specify computers by IP address that do not have to authenticate or protect traffic. Server-to-server rules are used to specify traffic protection between specific computers, typically servers. You must specify the set of endpoints that will exchange protected traffic by IP address when you want authentication to occur, and the authentication method for protected traffic. You can create a tunnel rule to specify traffic protection that is tunneled. This is typically used when sending packets across the internet between 2 security gateway computers. You must specify the tunnel endpoints by IP address and authentication method. The custom option allows you to create a rule that does not specify protection behavior. You would select this option when you want to manually configure a rule, perhaps based on advanced properties that cannot be configured through the pages of the new authentication rule wizard. You must specify a name for the rule. In this example, we will create an isolation rule. Next, we must specify when we want authentication to occur. For example, for incoming or outgoing traffic, and whether we want to require or only request protection. Isolating computers based on their health status uses the new Network Access Protection Platform in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. For this rule, we will specify that inbound connections must be authenticated. For outbound connections, we will only request authentication. If the outbound authentication fails, the connection will still be allowed. Now we need to specify the authentication method to be used. The default authentication method is user-only using Kerberos. You can also use computer and Kerberos authentication, as well as computer certificates. The advanced setting allows you to specify multiple authentication methods, as well as a second authentication. The Windows firewall runs with three network profiles: domain, private, and public. The domain profile settings are applied when a computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account resides. The private profile is applied when the computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside, such as a public network like the Internet. The private profile settings are typically more restrictive than the domain profile, because the private profile settings do not need to include applications and services that are used only in a managed domain environment. The public profile is applied when a computer is connected to both a domain using a VPC connection and a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside, such as a public network like the Internet. The public profile settings are the most restrictive, because a computer is connected to a public network where the security cannot be as tightly controlled as within an IT environment. For this rule, we will restrict the connection to domain-joined computers. When authentication is requested, computer Kerberos authentication will be used. After the new authentication rule wizard has completed, there is a new rule with the name we specified in the details pane of the computer connection security node. Let's look at some of the advanced properties for this rule. On the General tab, you can see the rule's name and description, and you can enable or disable the rule using the Enable checkbox. The Computers tab contains the set of computers by IP address for which traffic is protected, which is currently any computer at either endpoint. The Authentication tab is just like what we saw in the wizard. On the Advanced tab, you can specify the profiles and types of interfaces, such as local area network, remote access, or wireless, to which the rule applies, as well as IPsec tunneling behavior. In Windows Vista, inbound connections are blocked by default. However, you can specify exceptions. The Windows Vista firewall includes many predefined exceptions that you can use for common protocols and services, or you can create your own. One of these is for remote desktop connections. Enabling this exception will allow inbound RDP connections. From the Remote Desktop Properties dialog box, you can specify the program to which the exception applies and whether to allow or block the connection, or to allow the connection only if it is secure. On the Users and Computers tab, you can specify that you want to allow connections only from specific users or computers. When creating custom exceptions, you need to know the protocol type and ports required. Remote Desktop uses TCP port 3389. You also can specify the scope of accepted incoming traffic. The scope defines the portion of the network from which the accepted traffic is allowed to originate, essentially the source IP address, both IPv4 and IPv6, of incoming traffic. In Windows Vista, you can configure both source and destination IP addresses for both incoming and outgoing traffic, allowing you to more closely define the type of traffic that is allowed or blocked. For destination addresses, you can also specify predefined addresses, including default gateway, WAN servers, DHCP servers, and DNS servers. These predefined addresses are dynamically mapped to the addresses of the host's currently defined default gateway, WAN servers, DHCP server, and DNS servers. The local subnet option dynamically maps to the set of addresses defined by your IPv4 address and subnet mask, or by your IPv6 local subnet prefix. On the Advanced tab, you can specify the profile, interface types, and services to which the exception applies. Finally, firewall policy settings can be exported, saved, and imported to other clients. Another facet of threat and vulnerability mitigation is improvements to Windows Defender. Windows Defender replaces Microsoft Windows Client Protection. Windows Defender is a security technology that helps protect you from spyware and other potentially unwanted software. Spyware is a general term used for software that performs certain behaviors, such as advertising, collecting personal information, or changing the configuration of your computer, generally without appropriately obtaining your consent. With Windows Defender, known spyware on your computer can be detected and removed. This helps reduce negative effects caused by spyware, including slow computer performance, annoying pop-up ads, unwanted changes to internet settings, and unauthorized use of your private information. This enhanced protection improves internet browsing safety by helping to guard the places where spyware can enter your computer. Windows Defender, included with Windows Vista, offers additional performance and security enhancements. Based on a new engine, Windows Defender is able to detect and remove more threats posed by spyware and other potentially unwanted software. Real-time protection, which helps prevent unwanted software from being installed, has also been enhanced to better monitor critical points in the operating system for changes. The Windows Defender user interface has been redesigned to make common tasks such as scanning and removal easier to accomplish, and offers a warning system that adapts alert levels according to the severity of a threat. A critical aspect of any anti-spyware solution is the ability to determine which programs are truly unwanted, which is compounded by the continual distribution of new spyware and other unwanted software. With Windows Client Protection, the worldwide SpyNet community plays a key role in determining which suspicious programs are classified as spyware. SpyNet is a voluntary network of users that help uncover new threats quickly to ensure that all users are better protected. Any user can choose to join SpyNet and report potential spyware to Microsoft. Another improvement with Windows Defender is it can now be run by all users on a computer, with or without administrative privileges. This ensures that all users on a computer are protected by Windows Defender. In addition, Windows Defender now has a new streamlined, task-oriented user interface that's easier to read and has fewer notifications. Network Access Protection, or NAP, is a new set of technologies built into Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn that will make it easier for IT administrators to require compliance with health policies in order to access the corporate network. NAP functions on four levels. It validates compliance to policy, it restricts access-based compliance to policy, it remediates as necessary, and it grants access accordingly. NAP ensures the client's ongoing compliance to policy. The NAP platform functions in real time. It recognizes, quarantines, and remediates threats before they can even pose a problem for the network. The process of NAP begins with the client attempting to access the network. When the client requests access to the network, it must present its current health status. Then, the DHCP, VPN, or switch router relays the client's health status to a network policy server, or NPS. The NPS will then validate the health status against IT-defined health policies. If the client is policy compliant, it's given immediate access to the corporate network. Clients who do not meet the health requirements will be blocked from accessing the network. Instead, they are given access to remediation servers, which contain resources to make the client policy compliant. This process ensures that only healthy systems connect over the corporate network. Enforcement of NAP can be accomplished through DHCP, VPN, IPsec, or 802.1.1. One X, which allows organizations to design and scope the deployment to suit unique business requirements. The policies can be configured specific to the risks and threat levels faced by each organization. NAP also provides increased business value. The NAP platform integrates with Active Directory, SMS, Security Center, Microsoft Update, and Windows Update. In addition, Microsoft has made network access protection an open platform for the industry. Our partners have announced support for the NAP platform in their product lines, which responds to our common customers' requirements to provide a multi-vendor, interoperable end-to-end solution. The Network Access Protection Platform fits in with the greater Microsoft goal of making your business more secure while remaining conscious of your business's bottom line. We've explored the steps taken with Windows Vista to ensure threat and vulnerability mitigation. Now let's look at some of the improvements to identity and access control. Several challenges exist now with regards to identity and access control. First, with many users operating with administrative privileges, desktops are not being managed correctly. Viruses and spyware can damage the system while users are operating with these elevated privileges. Also, enterprise users operating with elevated privileges can compromise the corporation. Inexperienced users can also make changes that require re-imaging the computer to undo them. While this problem can be fixed by taking away administrative privileges from users, it can result in loss of productivity. Many line-of-business applications require elevated privileges to run, so without administrative privileges, these applications won't work. With each new operating system release, IT administrators must reevaluate these applications for compatibility issues due to inconsistent configuration settings between the operating systems. Along with line-of-business applications requiring elevated privileges, many common operating system configuration tasks also require elevated privileges. For example, without administrative privileges, users are not able to change the time zone on their computers. One of the new features in Windows Vista designed to tackle some of these challenges is user account control. User account control allows the systems to run as a standard user. Also, users can run select applications in an elevated context. This means that when a standard user tries to do something that requires administrator privileges, when he or she starts the application or does something that requires elevated privileges, he or she will be prompted for administrative credentials. If, on the other hand, the user is a member of the local administrators group, he or she will be prompted for consent. In this way, we are making sure the applications and malware do not use your administrative privileges without your explicit consent. And, as you'll see in a moment, these prompts and dialog boxes make it very clear to the user when he or she is about to take an action that has system-wide impact. Another new feature of user account control involves application compatibility. Many applications currently fail under Windows XP if they are not running with administrator privileges because they attempt to write to restricted places that have system-wide impact, such as the program's file folder or the HKEY local machine registry key. With file virtualization and registry redirection, writes to those areas will be redirected to a per-user location, as we'll see in the next demonstration. Actions that require elevated privileges or user consent are indicated by a shield icon. The shield icon appears next to any task requiring elevated permissions. For example, a user accessing advanced system settings, hardware, backup and restore, or change settings will be prompted for administrative credentials. On the other hand, administrator accounts will be prompted for permission to allow the program to run. As you work through the various user interfaces for advanced options, for example, Windows Vista will continue to prompt you for permission to run any application or system component that requires elevated permissions. Let's look at some other instances where you might see elevation prompts. If you are logged in as a standard user and attempt to run the Disk Cleanup Wizard, you will be prompted to select the account to use that will allow this elevated privilege. Again, if you are already logged on with a system account that has administrative rights, you will still be prompted for consent when you try to perform actions that may have system-wide impact, although you will not need to provide additional credentials. For example, when logged on as an administrator, you may see a dialog box asking for permission to run a known system utility. Another dialog box may recognize, for example, Adobe Photoshop as a signed trusted application. A third dialog box may ask your permission to run an application called GetRichQuick.exe. Different colors are displayed for each level of trust. This is meant to keep users from just automatically clicking Allow whenever the dialog box appears. Now let's see the effects of UAP on our Windows Vista system. In this demonstration, we will review how Windows Vista has improved the user experience for standard users through elevated privilege prompts and application compatibility. We will also look at how consent prompts appear for users with administrative privileges. Let's look at what we've done to make it easier to work as a standard user in Windows Vista. First, we'll switch users and log on as Aaron Kahn, a standard user account in the Contoso domain. If you've ever used Windows XP as a standard user, you've probably run into several frustrating issues. You can't open the clock properties to look at the time, much less change the time zone. You can't change power management settings, and many applications don't run properly in that environment. A few things have been changed to make that experience much better within Windows Vista for the standard user. If we need to change the time on our computer, it is still an action that requires elevated privileges. Anytime you try to perform an operation that requires administrator privileges, you'll see a shield icon, which indicates that elevated privileges are required in order to perform this action. After you click the shield icon and supply administrative credentials, you can unlock Control Panel and actually undertake the operation. You may be thinking the issue is still there because only an administrator can change the system time. However, the time settings on the computer itself are very important for Kerberos authentication, which is the default authentication method of the Windows network. What we've actually unlocked for the user is the ability to change the system time zone. This is especially important for traveling users who you need to provide with restricted permissions. This is one way that we've made greater strides in improving the experience for the standard user. Let's look at another example of how we're keeping the environment safe yet functional. If we look at the properties of the computer, we'll see that if we wanted to change system settings or the product key, these would be considered administrative operations. And if we were to try to change the product key, we would again be prompted for administrative credentials. You will see the same awareness in other areas of the operating system as well. For example, if we try to install a downloaded program rather than just running the setup, Windows understands that the operation requires administrative privileges. Once again, if we can supply those administrative credentials, the installation can begin. If not, the installation will not start. Another area in which this applies is in using legacy applications. We have added a new feature to ensure that legacy applications will still run satisfactorily for standard users. Let's see an example of what this looks like. This sample application is designed to simulate what a lot of applications do when running under Windows XP. They try to save per-user settings in the Program Files folder. We'll type some text in the message field and then choose the option to save this to a shared database, meaning the program files folder, and save the message. A file save success message appears at the bottom of the application window. Under Windows XP, the save would have failed unless we were an administrator. but it wasn't really created in the program files folder. What happened was that the write operation was actually redirected to something called the virtual store, which is a per-user location. This is where the file actually resides, and again, this happens without any modification to the application whatsoever. So, when the application tried to write to program files, under Windows XP we would have seen an access denied error, but Windows Vista captured that write operation and then redirected it to a virtual store. Next, we will look at how this differs when you log on as a member of the local administrators group. Now, as an administrator, you have the ability to customize or control the behavior of the user account control security feature. To do this, you can access the local security policy or the domain group policy. The user account control options are found in the security options container. From here, you can control the UAC behavior for elevation, for administrators, and standard users. Behavior of the elevation prompt for administrators in admin approval mode policy controls the behavior of Windows Vista when elevated permissions are needed for a given task. By default, an operation that requires elevation of privileges will prompt you to either permit or deny. If you select permit, the operation will continue with the highest available privilege. The prompt for consent dialog box removes the inconvenience of requiring that users enter their username and password each time they want to perform a privilege task. By selecting the prompt for credentials option, you can force UAC to always prompt for administrative credentials to perform a privileged task. The last option, no prompt, allows you to perform any operation that requires elevation without consent or credentials. This scenario should only be used in the most constrained environments. While logged on as a standard user, you can either prompt for credentials, which is the default for workgroup installations, or select no prompt, which is the default for domain environments. The no prompt option results in an access denied error message being returned to the user when trying to perform an operation that requires elevated privileges. In the domain environment, you'll want to use the no prompt option to reduce help desk calls. The next UAC setting is the Detect Application Installations and Prompt for Elevation setting. When enabled, application installation packages that require elevated privileges to install will be heuristically detected and trigger the elevation prompt. Enterprises running standard user desktops that leverage delegated installation technologies like Group Policy Software Install or SMS will disable this feature. In this case, installer detection is unnecessary and thus not required. The user account control setting, only elevate executables that are signed and validated, is disabled by default. When enabled, UAC will not allow you to run unsigned applications on the computer in any circumstance. This setting may unduly hamper the user's productivity, so only enable this option for extremely high security situations. The Run All Administrators in Admin Approval mode enables the Consent Admin User Type, which allows only certain users to give permissions to programs to run with elevated privileges. Disabling this policy disables the Consent Admin User Type. If you disable this security policy, the Security Center will notify you that the overall security of the operating system has been reduced and gives all users the ability to self-enable elevated permissions. To prevent malicious spoofing of the UAC consent dialog boxes, we've added the Secure Desktop option for the Windows Vista Beta 2 release. By default, all elevation prompts now occur on the Secure Desktop. The Secure Desktop's primary difference from the User Desktop is that only trusted processes running a system are allowed to run. And the path to get the most secure desktop must always be trusted through the entire chain. Furthermore, the user experience in the Secure Desktop is unmistakable. When you click a UAC shielded control, the user desktop turns to gray, and the Elevation user interface is the only item with which you can interact. The final setting controls the virtualization of file and registry write failures, as shown earlier in this demonstration. This policy enables the redirection of legacy application write failures to defined locations in both the registry and file system. This feature mitigates those applications that historically ran as administrator and wrote runtime application data back to the program files folder, the Windows directory, or the System32 directory, in addition to the HKEY local machine software registry key. Windows Vista's auditing capabilities make it easier to track what users do. Auditing in Windows Vista provides more granularity. Auditing categories now include multiple subcategories, such as logon, logoff, file system access, registry access, and use of administrative privilege, thus reducing the number of irrelevant events. Windows Vista provides a new logging infrastructure. It is easier to filter through the logs and find the event you're looking for. Tasks can also be tied to specific events with the task scheduler. For example, when an event such as administrative privilege use occurs, an email will be automatically sent to an auditor. In addition, integrated audit event forwarding collects and forwards critical audit data to a central location, enabling enterprises to better organize and analyze audit data. Another infrastructure change is improvements to the authentication process. There are a number of other core security infrastructure upgrades to be aware of in Windows Vista. First, the Graphical Identification and Authentication Credential Input Extension Model has been depreciated in favor of a more simple and straightforward credential provider model. With previous versions of Windows, the GINA operates in the context of the Win logon process. Therefore, the GINA DLL is loaded early in the boot process. The GINA DLL must follow rules so that the integrity of the system is maintained, particularly with respect to interaction with the user. The purpose of a GINA DLL is to provide customizable user identification and authentication procedures. The default GINA does this by delegating SAS event monitoring to WinLogon, which receives and processes Control-Alt-Delete secure attention sequences. Windows Vista ignores GINA DLLs. The new authentication model allows vendors to write credential providers with ease compared to writing a GINA. Previously, there can only be one GINA on a system, which sometimes made deployment difficult and limited the flexibility of the system. Windows Vista now enables you to have multiple providers and select a particular one as the default. For example, you can easily deploy a multi-factor authentication credential provider method without overriding a default single-factor authentication provider. To add a provider, all you need to do is put registration information for the DLL in the registry and export the entry points for the credential provider APIs. We have also enhanced the overall user experience by providing plug-and-play support for many smart card readers. Typically, in earlier versions of Windows, you had to pick a smart card and smart card reader, and then load a specialized certificate service provider onto the computer, and perhaps special drivers for the reader. With Plug and Play in Windows Vista, the goal is for you to simply plug your smart card reader into your computer, insert your smart card, type your PIN number for the smart card, and then quickly log onto the network or make your VPN connection. Other security changes involve more integrated control. First, we've addressed one of our top customer requests, which is giving you control of a removable device installation. This addresses the concern of users taking corporate intellectual property away on a USB flash device. In high security environments, this is a critical request. In Windows Vista, you have the ability to control what devices can be installed, so you'll be able to set policies that allow mouse devices and keyboards to be installed, but no other type of removable devices, such as a USB drive. We'll see this in the final demonstration of the session in a few moments. Another new technology in Windows Vista is the Restart Manager. The intent of Restart Manager is to significantly reduce the number of patches that require a system reboot. For example, when you download and begin to install a patch, Restart Manager will look at the patch and identify any processes that are holding a DLL, or services that are using that DLL, and will be able to proactively stop those services, allow the patch to be deployed, and then restart the services. The design goal is to reduce patch-related reboots by at least 50%. From a security center standpoint, we've added features to provide more visibility and also added anti-malware software status to the security center. This supports both Microsoft anti-spyware as well as third-party products. Now we will look at how you can manage control of a removable device installation. In this demonstration, we will show how you can configure the local computer policy to restrict the installation of a USB flash drive. Now let's look at one of the most requested features of Windows Vista, which is the ability to have control over which devices can be installed on the system. This can be used to keep people from logging onto a computer and plugging in a USB flash drive to steal corporate data. We'll use the security console that we created earlier to configure the default domain group policy object. The policy settings in which we are interested are found under the Computer Configuration node called Device Installation Restrictions. First, we will enable this policy setting to deny installation of any devices not described by policy settings. This will block all devices from being installed by the user. So if we were to deploy this computer to a user, the devices present are all that he or she can use. This user will not be able to install new drivers, including those that may already be present on the system. We'll also enable a setting that allows us to define exceptions to this rule. First, we need to open the Device Manager and identify that hardware ID for the device class that we want to allow users to install, in this case, mouse devices. Each device class has a unique hardware ID. For mouse devices, we will simply copy this value to the clipboard. Now back in the local computer policy editor, we will enable the rule that will allow the installation of device classes that we specify. And then paste that value that we just copied into this field. Now, if you were to plug a USB flash drive into the system, Windows Vista would still recognize that a new device has been plugged into the computer, and it would start the plug-and-play installation. However, Windows Vista will identify it as a USB drive and display a message notifying us that installation of one or more devices is forbidden by the system policy. So even though Windows Vista comes with the drivers necessary to use this USB flash drive, the local policy prohibits us from plugging it into the computer and using it. Let's move on to the final agenda item. One of the main reasons for identity and access control is information protection. Let's explore safeguards in Windows Vista that protect your information. In our ever-expanding world of technology, information is easily available. However, not all of this information is something we want to share. Personal information needs to be protected. In addition, business decision makers have to take all the precautions necessary to ensure business-sensitive information is kept confidential. A recent research study by Jupiter Media found that the inadvertent forwarding of emails to unintended recipients and the loss of mobile devices containing sensitive information or intellectual property are two of the top three security breach concerns facing business decision makers. Windows Vista has an integrated rights management client that allows you to control the flow of your intellectual property and define who can actually view it. With Right Management Services, you can set policy rules on documents and ensure that those documents are viewable only by those to whom you have granted permission. RMS works with specific productivity applications that have been written to integrate with the security feature, such as Microsoft Office 2003 and Office 2007. Next, we have user-based file encryption with the Encrypted File System, or EFS, which has been used in Windows since Windows 2000. You might use EFS if you have a computer that has multiple users and you want to encrypt that data at the per-user level to keep one user from accessing another user's data. In Windows Vista, there are several EFS enhancements, including the ability to store your EFS keys on a smart card, as well as the ability, in conjunction with Windows Server Longhorn, to copy EFS protected data to a Windows Server Longhorn file server and have that file stay encrypted end-to-end. The third thing that we've done from a data protection standpoint is give you the ability to perform drive-level encryption. BitLocker Drive Encryption is an integral new security feature in Windows Vista that provides complete offline data and operating system protection for your computer. BitLocker ensures that data stored on a computer is not revealed if the computer is tampered with when the installed operating system is offline. This helps protect your data from theft or unauthorized viewing by encrypting the entire Windows volume. Another way that data is protected at the computer level is through BitLocker Drive Encryption. BitLocker Drive Encryption is a data protection feature available in Windows Vista Enterprise and Windows Vista Ultimate Editions for client computers and in Windows Server Longhorn. BitLocker is a response by Microsoft to one of our top customer requests. Address the threats of data theft or exposure from lost, stolen, or inappropriately decommissioned PC hardware with a tightly integrated solution in the Windows operating system. BitLocker prevents a thief who boots another operating system or runs a software hacking tool from breaking Windows Vista file and system protections or performing offline viewing of files stored on the protected drive. BitLocker enhances data protection by bringing together two major sub-functions: system volume encryption, and checking the integrity of early boot components. Drive encryption protects data by preventing unauthorized users from breaking Windows file and system protection on lost or stolen computers. The entire system volume is encrypted, including the swap and hibernation files. Checking the integrity of early boot components helps to ensure that data decryption is performed only if those components appear tamper-free and that the encrypted drive is located on the original computer. BitLocker offers the option to lock the normal boot process until the user supplies a PIN, much like an ATM card PIN, or inserts a USB flash drive that contains keying material. These additional security measures provide multi-factor authentication and assurance that the computer will not boot or resume for hibernation until the correct PIN or USB flash drive is presented. Finally, BitLocker provides enhanced recovery options. BitLocker has a disaster recovery console integrated into the early boot components to provide for data retrieval. In the default setting, BitLocker requires no user actions, and even activation itself can be done remotely and automatically. By being tightly integrated with Windows Vista, BitLocker provides a seamless, secure, and easily manageable data protection solution for the enterprise. For example, BitLocker optionally leverages an enterprise's existing Active Directory domain services infrastructure to remotely escrow recovery keys. Based upon policy, BitLocker can also be set to back up keys and passwords onto a USB dongle or to a file location. A recovery password should also be set by the administrator so that Windows operation can continue as normal. With Windows XP on a dual boot system with the volume protected by BitLocker, you'll be prompted to format the drive. Now with Windows Vista, you'll be denied access. BitLocker uses a Trusted Platform Module, or TPM, to provide enhanced protection for your data and to assure early boot component integrity. This helps protect your data from theft or unauthorized viewing by encrypting the entire Windows volume. BitLocker Drive Encryption is designed to offer a smooth user experience with systems that have compatible TPM microchip and BIOS. A compatible TPM is defined as a version 1.2 TPM with an appropriate BIOS modifications required to support the static root of trust measurement as defined by the Trusted Computing Group. The TPM interacts with the BitLocker Drive Encryption to help provide seamless protection at system startup. The TPM helps protect secrets and provides another chain of trust for keys and credentials. A TPM is a microcontroller that stores keys, passwords, and digital certificates. Normally, it is attached to the motherboard. However, it can be used in any computing device that requires its functions. TPM specifications require cryptographic algorithms, RSA, SHA-1, and HMAC. The TPM provides secure storage and key generation capabilities similar to other hardware authentication devices, so it can be used to create or store both user and platform identity credentials for use in authentication. The TPM can also protect and authenticate user passwords, therefore providing an effective solution integrating strong, multi-factor authentication directly into the computing platform. With the addition of complementary technologies such as smart cards, tokens, and biometrics, the TPM enables true computer and user authentication. BitLocker enabled systems using TPM only authentication can be used just like any other system. After starting Windows, users are prompted for their domain username and password, which is a normal logon experience. Unless informed about the feature, users will not be aware that there is an extra level of protection on their computers. Customers have several choices of how to deploy BitLocker, with a range of ease of use versus security choices. From an ease-of-use standpoint, the TPM-only solution is completely transparent to the user. There is no special user interaction necessary in this mode, because the decryption key is released if the operating system hasn't been tampered with, based on operating system measurements that are stored in the TPM chip. If you want to deploy BitLocker to a computer without a TPM chip, the dongle-only solution is the only choice. The key to decrypt the volume is stored on a USB flash device with this deployment method. The user has to plug in the USB dongle each time the computer is booted, so ease of use isn't as good as with the TPM. The major downside to this deployment method is that it's reliant on human behavior. If the user leaves the USB flash drive with the decryption key in his or her laptop bag, and a thief gets the laptop bag, this person can decrypt the user's data. With this deployment method, the user needs to keep this USB flash device separate from the portable computer, for example, on a keychain. A TPM plus PIN solution is the best balance between security and usability. With this solution, the user simply has to enter a PIN each time the system is booted. The most secure and least usable way of deployment is TPM plus dongle. With this deployment method, the system will only boot if the operating system hasn't been tampered with while offline, and if the user inserts the correct USB flash device. You can be confident that Windows Vista is the most secure operating system that we have ever shipped. Steps have been taken at Microsoft to ensure that Windows Vista has gone through the software development lifecycle and that it adheres to code integrity standards. In addition, Windows Service Hardening ensures that critical Windows services only perform expected activities related to the file system, registry, and the network. Windows Vista includes features to protect users. User account control, while also providing security in your network, can allow users to perform business-related activities to stay productive. For example, laptop users can change the time zone and set power settings, which wasn't previously available without elevated permissions. Protected Mode in Internet Explorer 7 limits Internet Explorer to just enough privileges to browse the web, but not enough to modify user files or settings by default. This allows users to get the information they need while still protecting the computer against malicious sites. From rights management services and BitLocker drive encryption to improve smart card functionality and deployment, there are many exciting new security features in Windows Vista. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. In addition, you can visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/DSK-05 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Popular author and MVP William Stanek offers expert insights into this first look into the latest generation of Windows operating systems. Discover the new features and tools for deploying Windows Vista, help secure PCs and user accounts, migrate user settings and data, manage applications compatibility, improve reliability, reduce support costs, develop applications, and help users achieve new levels of productivity and success at home or on the job. Introducing Microsoft Windows Vista is the guided preview for IT professionals, business decision makers, early adopters, users, developers, and anyone else who wants to start planning and hit the ground running with Windows Vista. There is also another good book available from another publisher. Here is the ultimate one-stop desk reference for Windows Vista users. Windows Vista, the complete reference, provides comprehensive coverage of the newest features of the operating system, from setting up for optimum performance and understanding the operating system, to finding files and keeping computer systems secure and free from spyware. This volume covers it all. It's the ideal resource for anyone who wants to truly master Windows Vista. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and it is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. A number of accreditations are available. Starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP, you can choose to become a fully certified System Administrator, or MCSA, System Engineer, MCSE, or Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, please welcome Caroline McGrath, TechNet Relationship Marketing Manager.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription. What is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription. That's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.